Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. Good evening.
And I can feel my voice, it's a little hoarse, so let me know if you can't hear me. So, tonight, liberating the truth of impermanence. Zazen liberates the truth of impermanence. Not turning away and not holding on liberates the truth of impermanence. But I just need to start by saying, you know, like the truth of impermanence. This is like a huge truth that's foundational to the whole Buddhist understanding of life and death. So we're not going to sort of pin down what this means. We're going to be exploring it together. The most we can do is to open some doorways or open some gates that will give us some glimpses of what this means, liberating the truth of impermanence. I like the word wonder, that we're going to wonder together. That word speaks to me because it captures something bigger than asking a question or thinking about it or analyzing it or even just reflecting on it. But to wonder means to marvel at something, to be astonished by something, to have rapt attention drawn to something that's surprising, or maybe an experience you've never had before. And that wondering, you know, sort of opens up a question, but doesn't answer it. Even wondering could mean we've experienced something that might even feel like a miracle. You know, it could be that astonishing, it could be that amazing. Because in the Buddha's words, at the moment of his awakening, sitting under the Buddha tree, the Buddha said, and of course this is a translation, but the Buddha said, "How wondrous, how wondrous. All beings are from their origin endowed with this same clear mind to which I have just awakened." How wondrous. So let's sort of enter the space of wondering together as we enter into our time of exploring what it means, liberating the truth of impermanence. So as I was preparing for this talk, I was remembering a poem that I wrote after we had our 5-year-old granddaughter's birthday party in our backyard. And this was a while ago. She's 5 years old, and she wanted a pool party. And so, of course, the kids were 5 years old, so all the parents came too. So we had all the parents and all the kids in the pool, and then we had cake and ice cream. We sang happy birthday. And then, I don't know, all the kids wandered into our living room where all the toys were, and they were just very quietly, harmoniously playing together. So the next day, I just felt something about this time. And so I wrote this poem. Like a high crescendo wave, 5-year-old birthday joy fills the air. Giggles, little people swimming, rippling forth on a water slide, eating mermaid cookies. Calm surroundings, throwing out a cascade of harmony. Then, like a wave receding, the swimming pool is still and empty. The water slide remains folded on a banister. The deck tables are gone. The homemade iced tea, since then made fresh, but never tasting the same. The wave continues to recede, leaving an empty space, waiting to be filled again with a new joy. Never again this precious moment of the 5-year-old pool party? Never again. But until I wrote this poem, I didn't really get the impermanence of this moment is what made it precious. I didn't know that until the poem came. Something moved me to write the poem, and this knowing wasn't realized, like the liberation wasn't realized until the poem emerged. So Norman Fisher says, "The imagination is powerful. Imagination is essential to our humanness. All imaginative productions arise from the unconscious to expand the soul. Data gives us the illusion that we know the world, but the world is more than we know. Its nature is to open, to mystify, to delight, shock, and spirit. It extends without limit." So it's clicking. Don't forget the truth of impermanence. Nothing is fixed. Nothing is to be repeated or sustained by effort. Everything is in motion, and everything changes. So maybe one thing we could say is, when words flow from the unexpressed to the expressed through our imagination, this is one way we liberate the truth of impermanence. Because even this poem is here now, and I'll never forget. Even though it's gone, I'll never forget. So last January, I met with my physician, and it was shortly after I had returned from canvassing in Nevada City for the presidential election. We discussed my health, and then for some reason, I just started to share my canvassing experience with my, and suddenly she started to share with me her experience of experiencing racism when she was in Nevada City for her daughter's soccer game. Here I was, sitting on the examining table, and suddenly she wasn't really just my doctor anymore. It was like a veil lifted, and she shared something very deep with me that was precious. And it was kind of like the veil opened, and something bigger happened between us. And at that same visit, she was exclaiming over my blood works. She said, "Everything's perfect." But suddenly, I burst out and started to tell her I was really scared because I have this word-finding problem. I can't always remember a name of somebody or a thought. It does come to me, but it doesn't come right away, so I was worried. And I suddenly said, "Does this healthy blood report protect me from dementia?" And she looked at me. She looked me right in the eye, and she said, "No, it doesn't." I felt shaky, but I felt touched at the same time. I felt her care and tenderness. So maybe sharing vulnerability is a liberation of the truth of impermanence, because those were moments when the veil lifted and something bigger was happening that will never happen again. So I felt like kind of an intimacy of connection. And then we have to remember, our vulnerability is a manifestation of impermanence, because we all suffer from illness, old age, and death. We suffer from disappointments, hurt, loss, failures, being separated from those we love. Our very life is impermanent. So maybe revealing our vulnerability liberates the truth of impermanence as the flow of connection. Because remember, the other side of impermanence is that everything is interconnected. Everything affects everything else. Everything that is because things are. Thich Nhat Hanh says we're here to awaken our delusion of separateness. So, do you see, like, I took the risk to share my vulnerability, recognizing that I could suffer from dementia. But she responded with her openness. She told me the truth. She didn't sort of like say, oh, I'm sure you're going to be fine. Or she could have said, oh, when that happens, I'll give you a referral to a neurologist, who'll give you a cognitive test. I mean, those things would have closed the connection, left us feeling separate from each other. But this way that I opened, and then she opened with her honesty and looking me in the eye, it was an amazing experience. It's a liberation from the suffering that we experience from thinking we are separate, from thinking, you know, we don't have to face the truth of impermanence. But also, my vulnerability and her honesty freed her to care and to give. That capacity to care would not have necessarily been evoked if there wasn't this opening in the moment and the sharing of vulnerability. And I also released my fear of impermanence, because we're connected. So, can you feel these two sides? This is our human condition. Impermanence and interconnection. So remember the Buddha's teachings of the three truths of existence. And this is really important. It's like, who are we as human beings? You know, what does it mean to be a human being? And the Buddha says, suffering is universal. We all suffer. That's part of what it means to be alive. Everything is impermanent. And it's a delusion to think we're separate and individual selves. These are the conditions of being human. And when we suffer when we live in not in alignment with these truths, that's the point. Like, if we can receive and accept this moment as never again and fully engage and open to the moment, we are in alignment with the truth of existence. But when we work against it, then that's when we suffer even more. So I begin to think, well, maybe the truth of impermanence is that impermanence is actually aliveness. Aliveness. It's exactly what is alive and happening in the moment if we can be there and be fully engaged and present. Maybe when the curtain lifts and the preciousness of the moment is realized, we awaken into wonderment. Just the naturalness of our breathing, our inhale and our exhale itself. That's an expression of impermanence. Our inhale's born, in our exhale it dies, and it's born again. This is even being with this and feeling the aliveness of our breath is a liberation of the truth of impermanence. So, many of you know already that the Buddha also says the antidote to suffering is to not turn away and to not hold on to something that matters a lot. And each of these tendencies, in a sense, are an attempt to deny this truth of impermanence. So to not turn away from our suffering may be very difficult. But I want to share with you a story that Sarah Emerson, who is a Zen priest at the Brooklyn Zen Center in New York right now, and she was one of the Zen priests at the Stone Creek Zen Center in California. And our women's book group has been reading this book, Zen Teachings in Challenging Times, and she has a chapter in this book, and she tells the story of the moments of the dying of her newborn daughter. And she says, "I'm in a high-tech hospital in Boston where our second daughter was born hours before. I'm moving down what is called the Hall of Hope, which leads to the NICU. Our baby has a good chance, we're told. But I'm also soon to be understanding that my younger daughter does not have much time to live. She was born 8 weeks early, healthy in many ways, but her oxygen level had been below 20% for an hour. And this is her words, "When I take it all in and eventually ask, 'So are we letting her go?' The doctor pauses and says, 'We never make that kind of decision without consulting everyone. And everyone working with your daughter agrees that would be the best thing to do.'" And so this is her. "I said, 'Okay then. We need some time alone with our child.' And here is the pivotal memory. This is about what it means to not turn away. The understanding that my daughter is dying is not what I expected. It's not at all what I want. But my daughter's life is going to be very brief. And if I don't get with that program, I'm going to miss it. So I got with that program. And I didn't miss it. I'm holding her, telling her things about life, what it feels like to run barefoot on a dock. Family comes, my oldest daughter. We're all holding this precious life together, resting now in her daddy's arms. I had to go to the bathroom, and when I came back, her heart stopped while I was gone." To be there at the preciousness of this moment. It calls us to do something really hard. But by not turning away, we're liberating the truth of impermanence. It's freeing us to meet the depth of life that's being given to us at this moment. Dogen says, Dogen is one of our teachers from 1200 AD in Japan. He says, "For birth, there is nothing but birth. And in death, there is nothing but death. Accordingly, when birth comes, face and actualize birth. And when death comes, face and actualize death. Do not avoid them or desire them." Not to turn away liberates the truth of impermanence, freeing us to meet the depth of what life is giving us at this moment. We also resist this truth by holding on to things that we love, or the joy we felt at this one event, or life that's comfortable, ways that we feel secure. We want it to go on forever. We all do. So I'll never forget this time I was at Green Gulch Farm, and we were having orioke meals. For some of you who may not know, it's kind of a ritual meal that we share in the Zendo, and we're served food that we eat together. And in this meal in the evening, I was so relaxed, and each taste of food was wondrous. I didn't eat too much, which is unusual, or too little. I felt satisfied in a new way. I was so excited. I said to myself, yes, this is how I want to live. And I really believed this could be my way. But the next morning, I woke up depressed. I couldn't understand it. How could I be so depressed after this experience last night? But it stayed with me most of the day until it came to me. You're holding on to a way of being. You're thinking it can be permanent. This is the cause of your suffering, the voice says to me, because this isn't how things are. Let go of holding on. My depression lifted. So Emily Dickinson, at the end of one of her poems, she says, to possess is past the instant we achieve the joy. To possess is past the instant we achieve the joy. So, wow. I don't know, many things may be coming to you now, but there's something sort of wondrous again about this truth, you know, that we can have this wide range of experiences, you know, being present at death and feeling the joy of, you know, being with someone you love, and all of it are moments that if we don't hold on and if we don't turn away, we're in the rich fullness of alive life in this moment, the aliveness of life that we aren't really in control of. So, and that brings us to another truth that we can't forget in the midst of this truth of impermanence, because something else is functioning here. We call it the inexhaustible function. The truth also that nothing is lost, nothing is annihilated. Something is inexhaustible and always here. And it is our Zazen practice itself, because in sitting Zazen, we enter the silence, the stillness, the space of infinite possibility. Just sitting, attending to what is arising and falling, we rest in the space of the inexhaustible function, the truth of the emptiness of all things, the truth that everything, everywhere, all at once, is always here. So somebody mentioned Katagiri earlier tonight, and he wrote this book, Each Moment is the Universe. And he talks about this truth of the silence and the stillness moving through everything. And he says, silence is something deep and also very active. In Japanese, the word for silence is mukure. Moku means silence, and rei means thunder. So silence is quiet, but there's an enormous thunder there. So, impermanence, well, when you are exactly present in this very moment and manifest yourself in total activity, you're participating in impermanence itself. But the silence is the birther of impermanence. So we dip down into the silence. Because actually, as Katagiri says, impermanence is very quiet. That silence underneath connects you with a deep sense of interconnectedness and of your value as a human being. He says, this very moment is no form. There's nothing but aliveness, activity, dynamic functioning, the great space where you can accept everything. And in silence, you'll find a deep love for human beings. So Katagiri also says, Buddhism is really hard, especially Dogen's teaching. He gives you a very hard practice. Keep your mouth shut and look directly at impermanence. This living practice is called Zazen. Zazen enables you to plunge below the surface and lead you to touch the core of your life. It's not easy, but you have to do it because spiritual life originates from the direct observation of impermanence, and something appears that's beyond our effort. So here we are. All we have are these moments that are arising from the silence of our sitting practice, from the silence that is birthing the aliveness all around us. And we are just here to participate, you know, by being fully present and not holding on, not turning away, seeing what arises that's not from our own effort. And here we are, listening, liberating this truth of the impermanence of all things. So, just in conclusion, James Baldwin says, one must say yes to life and embrace it wherever it is found. And it is found in terrible places. Nevertheless, there it is. The sea rises, the light falls, lovers cling to each other, and children cling to us. The moment we cease to hold each other, the moment we break faith with one another, the sea engulfs us and the light goes out. This truth is also the truth of the preciousness of being human being. Really, it's an amazing. And we're here to care for each other. And in that interconnectedness, then, we live impermanence, but we live the aliveness of how we're part of everything. So thank you for listening. And, my goodness, I was thinking that instead of just having questions and answers, that we could have sort of little groups of three as like a practice circle, because I'm sure many experiences have come up for you, you know, of anything that I've said. And this is the time to, you know, sort of actualize, express, let it come out and see what now we will give to each other in the sharing. So I think we have time. If we had groups of three, you just kind of turn towards each other, and the Zoom people will be, let's see, I guess two groups of two would probably be good. One, two, three. Or two groups of three, actually, that'll work. And then you'll each have a little bit of time, no crosstalk. This is a time just to share, and we listen. And then we can come back to the larger group and offer some further thoughts. So, I don't have a timer.
How much time?
Like 12 minutes?
Can I read the law after 12 minutes?
Okay. So, okay, I can just do it easily. So there's three in the back there, and then Barry, David, John, Daniel, Taylor. There's three here. Hey, this is working, except now. June, you want to go over this side over here? And one, two, three, and one, two, three, one, two. Okay, well, I can be your third. So I will, since we haven't left, I will trust each group to sort of monitor the time so each person has time to share. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, there we go. Got somebody.
Okay. Hi, this is Dell. This is Dell with the candle. I'm a large.
Oh yeah, nice.
Oh, are we?
Oh, good. And I don't know. Sorry, I don't know how to get rid of the candle. So you'll just have to listen and imagine me.
Or like in the bottom, like if you move your cursor down, if you're on a computer, there'll be like a button that says video in the bottom left. And if you click it, we should be able to see it.
Oh, that might do it.
There you go. I see it. It's coming. It's coming.
I still have the Sangha room.
No, I'm not saying.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You're right. Let me remove that. There we go. Now it's whoever's talking. Sorry about that.
So how many of us are together in this room?
I think there's just three of us.
Yeah, I don't think Alan is. He hasn't unmuted. Alan, are you going to participate? No. So I think it's just Millard. It's just you and Dell. And I'm going to mute myself again. I'm here at the Sangha. I'm the guy running the AV.
Yeah.
But you two can just talk. How you
hi,
doing?
Good to see
okay,
you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. And your video didn't come on, Dell, so I don't know. You might as well turn it off again.
I don't know. Why it's doing
that. Yeah, don't worry about it. But we can hear you good. All right, I'll let you guys go at it.
Okay, thanks.
And you're muted in here, so don't worry. They can't hear you.
Okay, thanks, Derek.
Oh, great. Hi, Millard.
Hi, Dell.
Present in the moment with each other and offering your experiences or your thoughts and... Just before we end, just to open it up again, if anyone else has something they might want to share from the practice circle or my talk or anything else. Yes, thank you. I'm so curious.
We were talking about the pain, the joy and the pain of nostalgia and what to do with it, or at least I was thinking that. And so we're trying not to reject all nostalgia as bad. It's got a lot of neat things to it. Just don't grasp it too hard. But that's it.
But you can turn towards it and sort of let it give more experience, but you don't have to... fall into it either.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Thank you.
It's ready to go. Me and Jill and Katrina were talking about how nothing's impermanent. Nothing's impermanent. And how we all came to Zen, which is pretty epic. Also, I gotta say, for your earlier Dharma talk, banging sermon, my girl.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a reference to a video game I like.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing.
Here you go, Katrina.
There's a poem by William Blake I really like. That it's called Eternity.
Is it on?
Yeah. Is that better?
Oh, there it
is. There's a poem by William Blake I really like called Eternity, and I kind of botch it, but the end of it goes, you know, if we can kiss the joy as it flies, then we can be with eternity's sunrise, something like that. And I've been really trying, because the nostalgia has been hard for me. That brings me a lot of suffering traditionally in my life, but I'm learning to just kiss that joy, those good memories, as they fly, and not try to like bite on them and hold them, you know.
That's so beautiful. Thank you. To kiss the joy. Wow. Kiss the memory. Anyone on Zoom? Some people have left. Hi, Millard. Hi, Dell. I don't know who A. Oh, Alan.
So,
Can you? Hello? Well, since it's no longer really there, Clearwater Zendo, I'll quote the Han that we had there, the wooden thing that we... And it said, life is transient, swiftly passing. Beware the great matter. Don't waste time.
Yeah. Amen.